ladies and gentlemen. Sorry for the delay. The meeting went a little bit late. The Secretary General will make some opening remarks to tell you how the meeting has gone until now, and we'll have time for a few questions. Secretary General.
Good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Let me start with a subject which was, of course, discussed during the meeting. The reports you all have received that Alexander Milinkevich, the opposition leader in Belarus, has been detained by the Lukashenko regime for participating in a march. And let me start by saying, on behalf of the Allies, this is, of course, not acceptable. And it's another demonstration, I'm afraid, of the kind of anti-democratic behaviour on the part of the regime. I call on the regime in Minsk to release Mr. Milinkevich immediately and to refrain from these kind of actions in the future. I think the Euro-Atlantic community cannot accept these kind of things and this kind in the heart of Europe. And that is the start. Let me say on the NATO meeting, knowing that the people of Sofia might suffer from traffic jams from the informal foreign ministers' meeting, NATO cannot be held responsible for the earthquake which happened earlier this afternoon. I had not made my introductory statement as yet, but I should thank, and that's why I'm saying this, the Bulgarian government and the people of Bulgaria, more specifically of Sofia, for hosting us, because these meetings are a disruption, and on the other hand, the government, of course, not only in Bulgaria, but also in Bulgaria, is very busy in controlling the floods, which, of course, disrupts people's lives very much. And I can tell you that the European Atlantic Disaster Coordination Centre of NATO is coordinating the help of allies. All right, to the meeting. A building block. A formal discussion between foreign ministers on the way to Riga. And Sofia will help and has to help to shape the Riga summit. I say again, during informal meetings, we will take no decisions, but the political character of the discussion is, of course, important. And we opened with a political discussion on NATO's ongoing transformation and, more in particular, NATO's partnerships. My sense from the meeting is, and my conclusion is, that there's a clear sense with the Allies to move forward on partnerships, to keep the existing partnerships, to strengthen them, not to do away with them because they're important, but also to realize that there are other nations, given the global threats and challenges NATO is facing, other nations relevant for NATO, either because they participate in NATO's operations and missions. Let me mention Australia, let me mention New Zealand, as far as Afghanistan is concerned. And since NATO is having its operations over strategic distance, long distance, it means that there is also the need for a dialogue with other interested nations. So NATO, seeking new partners on the basis of their participation in operations or on the basis of the global threats and challenges. I could mention Japan, I could mention South Korea as well. The Japanese foreign minister is coming to Brussels to speak to the NATO ambassador soon. The South Korean foreign minister was there. If I discuss strengthening existing partnerships and the road to building a flexible partnership, in what kind of structure that will be, it's too early to say. But the notion flexible partnerships crossed my mind when I listened to the ministers. This is going to be built in the coming period because Riga, of course, is the moment where the alliance want to give political signals. If I mention partnerships, let's not have the misunderstanding that the center of gravity is not anymore the Euro-Atlantic. The center of gravity will stay the Euro-Atlantic area. NATO's core function, I said it this afternoon for the Atlantic Club of Bulgaria, NATO's core function is integrated defense, is the Washington Treaty, is Article 5. So that is not a consequence of what I tell you about partnership. We should not forget that. The second discussion we had was a discussion on possible NATO enlargement. And I have no doubt that in Riga and at the summit in Riga, countries aspiring to NATO membership will want a signal. Now, you will ask me what kind of signal that will be. Too early to say this at this very moment, but it's clear that the kind of signal the Allies are going to give in Riga, and I think we're going to give a signal, depends first and foremost on their performance. That is the mantra. It is a performance-based process. And it is also, I think, clear that there will be a signal in Riga, but that actual invitations to join, I think, cannot be expected already at the Riga summit. The line I would like to give to you in this respect is that when they are ready, NATO is ready. And that is, of course, relevant for the three nations in the Balkans who are in the membership action plan. That is very, very relevant for Ukraine, having the intensified dialogue with NATO. And tomorrow we'll speak with Foreign Minister Boris Tarasuk and hear from him how he analyzes the situation. And that goes, of course, also for Georgia, having now the individual partnership action plan, having had lots of success with its reform and seeking intensified dialogue. So also here, the when and the where I can't answer because it is, are they ready? Then the North Atlantic Alliance, then NATO is ready. Let me be clear, again, to avoid misunderstanding, here in Sofia, there are no decisions on specific timelines or on specific countries. These were the two main themes which were discussed, the future of NATO's partnerships and the NATO enlargement discussion. I should add that there was strong support for a NATO training initiative. A NATO training initiative, first of all, of course, in full consultation with our partners in the framework of NATO's Mediterranean Dialogue and the Istanbul Cooperation Initiative, in other words, in the region of the Middle East. Strong support, and I know that the nations concerned also have shown a keen interest, but we'll do that in consultation with them. NATO doesn't impose anything, but NATO is good at training, and there's added value for the nations concerned, but there is definitely also added value for NATO in establishing something which I have dubbed a training initiative. It is good for military and civilians from the region to learn about NATO. It is good for NATO officers and NATO people to learn about the region. Added value from both the sides. Those were the three main subjects. Now, tonight, you know, we'll have the transatlantic dinner, which also is informal, no agenda. And that transatlantic dinner could address a range of topics. I would not be surprised. It's ministers only, as you know, and Javier Solana and myself, EU and NATO foreign ministers. I would not be surprised if at that dinner tonight the Middle East, in the broad sense, will come up again. There have been ministers who have recently been traveling to the Middle East. The Spanish minister, Moratinos, has just come back this afternoon from a trip. Other ministers have been traveling. I do definitely not exclude, although that can be a subject for the breakfast tomorrow as well, when we discuss NATO's operations and missions, that Darfur will be discussed around the EU-NATO table. After all, the EU is doing a lot, assisting the African Union in Darfur. NATO as you know, also involved in troop transport through the air and in training for the African Union. And I can tell you any other subject of relevance which might come up at the transatlantic dinner. I think I can stop here. I'm open to your comments and questions.
First questions.
If you have no mic, oh, you have a mic.
Thank you.
Okay.
Alexandrina Avramova, Nova Television, Bulgaria. Mr. Secretary General, I want to ask you, will the alliance have common position about such an issue like Iran nuclear program? Thank you.
Well, if I mention the dinner tonight and the subject of broader Middle East, an EU and a NATO minister sitting together, I certainly do not exclude that the theme Iran will be discussed. I mean, the EU3 and the United States, of course, and the Security Council are very busy there in the diplomatic process. NATO is not. That does not mean that this is not a subject which is relevant for the Allies. Of course it's relevant. But the EU3 and the US Security Council, IAEA, are the ones who are leading the process and not NATO. So, as I saw in one of the reports of my remarks this afternoon, let's not have the misunderstanding that now NATO is suddenly involved in the discussion of Iran. NATO is not, but you will agree with me, I hope, and your viewers will agree with me, that this is a subject which is, of course, by definition, a relevant political subject when you have EU foreign ministers and NATO foreign ministers sitting together.
Laurent Zekini, Le Monde. Monsieur le Secrétaire Général, la question de l'élargissement de l'OTAN à d'autres pays, la question des partenariats de l'OTAN, tout ça en fait recouvre un peu le même sujet, c'est-à-dire le rôle de l'OTAN et le rôle que les Américains voudraient nettement plus global et nettement plus politique. Et vous savez qu'un certain nombre de pays, dont la France, sont assez réticents. Est-ce que vous avez abordé cette question de fond et sous quelle forme ?
On a certainement abordé la question, parce que vous avez raison, il y a une relation certainement entre les sujets. Il faut faire néanmoins une distinction, à mon avis, entre une alliance globale. L'OTAN n'a pas, et vous le savez, ce que je peux dire maintenant, l'OTAN n'a pas la mission d'être le gendarme du monde, certainement pas, mais si l'on voit les défis et les menaces avec lesquels l'OTAN est confrontée aujourd'hui, ce sont les menaces et les défis globaux. Alors, je ne dis pas une alliance globale, je dis une alliance, l'OTAN, et je vous ai dit, vous n'avez pas oublié mes remarques sur l'article 5 et les Center of Gravity, excusez-moi, on n'a pas trouvé le mot en français, euro-atlantique de l'alliance. À l'autre côté, on peut dire une alliance avec des partenaires, globaux. Et il y a une différence entre une alliance globale et une alliance avec les partenaires globaux ou globales ? Globaux. Globaux, d'accord, le partenaire. Alors, c'est, l'essentiel du dialogue et de la discussion. Et j'ajoute, ça n'a rien à faire avec le fonctionnement de nos partenariats actuels. Mais si l'on voit, par exemple, les nations participant aux opérations et missions de l'OTAN, c'est pas seulement l'Australie et Nouvelle-Zélande, comme j'ai évoqué, mais aussi la Finlande, la Suède, l'Autriche, la Suisse. Alors, on a aussi, bien sûr, les partenaires européens qui sont relevants. Et je crois que si l'on voit les discussions à Bruxelles autour du tas de l'OTAN, comme on fait déjà à l'Afghanistan, de plus en plus, on va bien sûr aborder aux discussions opérationnelles et aussi politiques avec les partenaires qui participent aux opérations de l'OTAN.
Steve Ebeling from DPA, the German press agency. Secretary General, if I may that follow up, my impression is that the need and necessity of existing partnerships and of future partnerships is more or less out of the question. The thing seems to be whether it is necessary to create new fora or new institutions, to invent new institutions. What is your opinion on that? Because this seems to be quite a controversial point of discussion.
Well, you're right, but I said it's early in the day. Several allies have tabled proposals on this issue. And in some proposals you see a structure, and in some proposals you see other forms. That has not been decided yet. It's simply too early in the day. My opinion would be that certainly, as I said in French a moment ago, certainly we could and should build something more what we do already in the framework of Afghanistan, that we have the partners, NATO partners, participating in our operations, whose men and women run the same risks more frequently at the NATO table, to discuss, of course, operational matters, but also discuss political matters. And then you have other nations, if I say not a global alliance, but an alliance with global partners, there are a number of other of global partners who are themselves interested in NATO. Now, how you structure that exactly, it is too early to say, and that's, that discussion will go on. I do not see, by the way, any controversy, neither in Brussels, in the sessions we have discussed it with ambassadors, nor here, by the way, because there is strong support for building flexible partnerships, and how that exactly will take shape the coming month we'll have to learn.
Албена Мирошникова, Българско национално радио. Каква е вероятността?
Excuse me.
Каква е вероятността създаването на европейските отбранителни сили да отслабят...
Just a second, because I'm not a technician, as you see. I have to plug it in.
Okay. Каква е вероятността създаването на европейските отбранителни сили да намалят и да отслабят ресурса на НАТО, тъй като много голяма част от страните членки на Алианса и сега трудно изпълняват ангажиментите си, а са поели такива и към европейските отбранителни сили? Обсъждан ли е този въпрос?
I can answer you that every allied defense minister, and that goes, of course, in your question more specifically about the nations who are EU and NATO member, is working with one single set of forces. We don't have soldiers, separate soldiers who have an EU patch on their shoulder or a NATO. Those are the same soldiers. And that's the reason that as the European Union develops its security and defense identity in consultation and in complementarity with NATO, I'm very much in favor. I've said that many times before, I repeat it again. At the same time, it's quite true that the challenges and the call on NATO and NATO allies, but also European allies, for their forces increases. Now, that means two things. First of all, that reorganization and restructuring of armed forces needs to go on efficiently and effectively. We have come a long way, but we are not there yet. Point number two, that every ally should realize that restructuring your defense forces costs money, as Bulgaria knows and any other ally knows. And if I see defense budgets on the downslope, that doesn't make me happy, as Secretary General, to put it very mildly. Point number three, I think if you look at NATO and if you look at the European Union and if you look at the demands on both organizations, there is a lot to do for both organizations. But the one should not go to the detriment of the other, and that's why I use the word complementarity. It's not necessary for the European Union to reinvent the wheel, which has been turning in the NATO framework very successfully for decades. On the other hand, it is logic, given the process of European integration, that Europe takes its own responsibility. We have seen a smooth transition from NATO to the European Union in Bosnia-Herzegovina, where S4 became U4. Under a formula which we call Berlin Plus in our jargon, which means drawing on NATO means. And now we see, for instance, the European Union being or becoming active in the Democratic Republic of Congo. In Darfur, we work together. In other words, the one should not go to the detriment of the other.
George Papakotchev from TV Europe. The situation in Kosovo is still very precarious. What are the plans of NATO for Kosovo, and is there any specific role for Bulgaria in these plans? Thank you.
NATO supports President Ahtisaari and the status talks and the UN. And if you ask for a NATO role, it is create a climate of security and stability through KFOR, protecting majority and majority alike, a climate in which those status talks can proceed. That is NATO's role. KFOR is there. KFOR is there to stay. KFOR is 17,000 men and women strong. That is a very important role. What that role will be after, hopefully, we would see an end to the status talks. We don't know when that will be, is, of course, a matter for discussion. But I could not see that NATO would immediately give up its responsibility in that framework. At the same time, to see that the status talks succeed, all parties should make it a point that they cooperate, and all parties should make it a point that this is a process where all parties have to make concessions and where all parties have to refrain from remarks which hamper always go to the detriment of the status quo. But NATO is there, and NATO is there for the time being to stay.
Sorry to those who have asked questions, but this is the last one in the back that we have time for.
Okay. Yes. What is the reason for you to decide to enhance the cooperation with countries like Austria or Japan? Especially, what the NATO would get as a good point with the relationship with Japan?
Well, I can tell you from my personal experience that when I was in Japan last year, the Japanese government showed a keen interest in NATO, showed a keen interest in what NATO is doing, showed a keen interest in the reasons behind NATO being in Afghanistan, showed a keen interest in regional players in the Japanese in the region participating in NATO forces. I think the best argument I can give you is that Minister Aso will come to the NATO Council soon, and that is what I call a political dialogue. And Japan is an important nation. Japan plays a role. Japan might play other roles in the future. I know this is not the moment. So it is, I think, may I use the expression, added value again. I think there is certainly added value in Minister Aso's visit or my visit to Japan for NATO. And Minister Aso proves that he thinks that there is also added value for Japan to come to NATO and explain a number of Japanese positions, listen to the NATO ambassadors. This is a consequence of the fact that, as I said a moment ago, we are facing global threats and challenges. And I say again, that does not mean that we are going for a global NATO, which is a sort of global cop, the world's policeman. NATO doesn't have that ambition. But the discussion is a very relevant one. Keeping the focus on the Euro-Atlantic area, that goes without saying that you see an alliance with an increased relation with global partners.
Thank you very much.